Famous for their iconic Humboldt fog, inspired by the misty Humboldt County coastline, Cypress Grove has been a cornerstone of American cheese for over 40 years. Their range of fresh, soft-ripened, and aged goat cheeses promises an unforgettable experience. Proudly crafted in Arcata, California, where the redwoods meet the Pacific Ocean, Cypress Grove cheeses are available nationwide at specialty retailers. Discover their cheeses, serving tips, and even order online at cypressgrovecheese.com. Perfect for any occasion or as a gift. There's nothing like that Humboldt fog feeling.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Lots to come in this next hour. Shortly, I'll be exploring the challenges facing our restaurant sector with staffing, energy, and cost of living, all playing their part in an increasingly pressurized environment. I'll be joined by the man on a mission to dispel the mysteries of investing in the stock market. Plus, Kieran Ivers of Green Rebel, he's in our executive chair. Now, the restaurant industry has experienced a boom in Ireland in recent years that isn't to say it's all been plain sailing. Here with us to tell us about the experience of the restaurant industry today for this week's industry review, I'm delighted to be joined by JP McMahon. He's the culinary director of the Eat Galway Restaurant Group, comprising of An Air and Cafe Bodega. Gina Murphy is the owner of the long-standing and much-loved restaurant Hugo's. Richie Barrett, a newer player on the scene, a restaurateur and general manager of Kickies on Dame Street in Dublin. You're all very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
Now, JP, we might start with you. Maybe just bring us up to speed with how the sector is at the moment. We're here in early August. I would hope there's a lot of tourists in Galway and that business is good.
Yeah, I mean, July and August are, I suppose, the key months in Galway, and we've had quite a slow first 6 months of the year, and it really only got going in June. So, yeah, there's plenty about. I mean, that's not to say again we're not down on last year. Now, last year was kind of like a bit of a bumper year because of post COVID and a lot of people about, but. This year, we found with the kind of various increases that have occurred, whether it's the minimum wage or the sick pay and various other ones, that were kind of that coupled with being down about 15 or 20%, which again, when you're very busy, is hard to see, and that's what I try and explain to people. Like, rather than doing 200, you might be doing 170, but if you do that continuously over 7 days, like, you end up with quite a shortfall. And because of the increases in wages and various other things. Yeah, it's precarious enough. I mean, not to say like it's not the worst year ever, but it is a challenging time at the moment.
It's interesting when you say that, JP, in terms of, you know, you say that your only opportunity, I suppose, all you can do, you know, if you're faced with an avalanche of costs, is put up prices. And is what you're saying really that there's a sensitivity that you can only push that so far, that you can only push up prices, because if you push them too far, people stop coming?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose we haven't tested that yet, in the sense that, I mean, particularly with Cava, I mean, the prices have gone up two or three times since COVID because of the war in the Ukraine. You had energy prices, you had oil prices, everything was going up. And like, we're still not there. Like, our wage percentage is still too high, even though we've stripped back the menu. We've tried to reduce staff numbers. And percentage-wise, I mean, on a quiet week, the wages could be 40% or even 45% in the winter, and which is not sustainable. Now, they're back at about 32 at the moment, but in the past, it would have been 27. And it's so what I try and explain to people that, like the only way that I suppose the restaurant can function is to, its only source of income is by charging people for things. And I don't think we're finished in Ireland in terms of where we are, in terms of the price of stuff.
We'll come back to that in a minute. Let's bring in our next guest, Gina Murphy of Hugo's. Gina, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
Tell us a little bit about how things are in the city. The city has changed a lot over the last number of years. I still don't think it's really recovered from COVID. It's still finding its new... It still hasn't found itself. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, wholeheartedly agree with you there. The city has changed fundamentally insofar as we were an office-based city, and now with everybody working remotely, we are missing a huge chunk of our regular, you know, walk past your door footfall every day. So much so that, say, in Hugo's, we don't open on a Monday anymore. We're down to 4 lunches a week, whereas we would have been a 7-day operation. You know, traditionally in Dublin, the Friday lunch was the big lunch. It's now our quietest because everybody, if they have the opportunity to work from home, takes a Monday and Friday.
And if we follow that through, so you're opening less hours, do you have to do more in the hours that you're open then?
Yes.
To try and, I suppose, counterbalance that?
Well, we're still trying to figure it out. We really are. It's not a fast check solution. And we are, I don't like the word pivot, but we are trying to be as universal as we can to try and attract every type of business in the door. But it is very different. And Richie and I were looking at each other when JP was talking about his staff costs. I mean, 32 is
You'd be delighted with it.
I'd be thrilled.
I know.
it's
in my day, it was 25% was what I used to work on.
We really are around the 40 to 44% most weeks. So it's challenging.
Well, okay, and I don't want to get into a kind of a circle of doom here, so because I want to talk about, you know, the upside of the restaurant business as well. Let's firstly introduce Richie Barrett. He's from Kiki's, another great restaurant, Richie. Your family were in the business. I know your dad. I know your cousins. So this is something that just kind of came fairly natural to you.
Yeah, it's amazing to have such a great support system as I do, and I've been long friends with Gina as well. So if I ever have any questions, they're just a quick phone call away, which has been instrumental to helping getting Kiki's off the ground.
Yeah, so tell us about how Kiki's came about. You probably always had one eye on doing your own thing at some stage. I know you worked in Bang, you worked in lots of places. You worked down in Australia for a while, building up your experience. But had you always one eye on the prize?
I did, yes. Since I was probably in my early 20s, I knew that I wanted to own my own restaurant. And I moved around a good bit, getting different experience in places around. And then I would have moved back to Dublin at the start of COVID. So I was off in Australia, in Indonesia at the time, getting my second year visa. Australia closed all of its borders and I moved on back. So then I got all that lovely experience in the COVID years in the hospitality industry here. And then my business partner, Eric, and I had worked together years and years back in Bang Restaurant. And we had always kept in touch, and I knew he was looking for some place, and he knew I was, and it was just kind of like...
And was there any upside on the COVID piece that maybe your property costs or the opportunity costs were slightly lower than they would have been in a booming time? Or
you would think that. You really would think that. Like, with the amount of closures of hospitality places over COVID, you would have expected the prices to have dropped, but they were very... very flat.
Yeah,
they didn't raise, which was obvious, but
it makes launch discuss. Like one of the things about launching any new business, if you can get the upfront costs right, you know, you have a much better chance of survival, number one, and maybe thriving thereafter. Like if you go in too high day one, you're destined to fail.
Yeah, it's cash flow management. Yeah. In the end of the day, like, you've just got to keep a close eye on the books and make sure that you plan for as much as you can in the end of it.
So in terms of the personality of the restaurant, that's obviously reflected in your own experience in Australia, your partners. What do you when you're building up your experience along the way, part of that must manifest itself into your current operation.
Yeah, of course. Like, you see, even just going out to different restaurants in London or Paris, you see things that you love, but you see things that you don't like as well. And that's just as important to learn from what you don't want to do as what to actually aim for.
Yeah. JP, back to you. And again, I'm trying to keep conversation relatively positive here. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all love this business, you know, challenges that it brings. You work long hours, you've worked very, very hard over the years. And, you know, even though it's challenging, you do stick with it.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I still occasionally look at different premises that are closed going, oh, maybe I'll open another restaurant. So, I'm not, whether that's a good or a bad thing, I don't know. But absolutely, I think that, I mean, while the food has fundamentally changed in Ireland over the last years, like, hospitality hasn't. And we've always had a great attitude towards hospitality. And it's one of the things I say to the guys in an ear. Like, I mean, it's the personality of the restaurant that has to come to the fore, because, I mean, dining is dining, and you get good food in so many places now. But yeah, we want people to leave with a little bit of personality, so then they can talk about us, because there's plenty of great restaurants in the world that I've eaten in that don't have a sense of personality. The food might be absolutely amazing, but so for me, it's kind of marrying those two things, the food that we have at the moment, which is amazing in Ireland, with that Irish hospitality, which goes back to the Middle Ages, you know, and that kind of.
Yeah.
Minding the guests when they come in and really kind of trying to get to know them.
Gina, one of the things about being a restaurateur, being in the business, is the love of being close to the customer. You work shifts,
you're
on the floor, you meet, you greet, you ask people how their day is going. That's surely the good part of the business for you, is it?
That's the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. It's, you know, I've never had a day where I've, you know, dreaded going into work. I love what I do. I'll be 17 years open next week.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. A tricky couple of years in the middle of it all. But every day is wonderful. The people that we get to meet just make you. And you learn from their experiences and they learn from you. But the overall thing is, I mean, as JP there said, it's in our DNA to be hospitable in Ireland. And isn't it a magical thing that you can make your living, or try and make your living, from doing something that's so much part of who you are?
Yeah.
And I love and I relish every minute. And I've made some phenomenal friends who have come in as customers, and I've gotten to know them over the years. And even just once-off people coming in, we've great crack.
Yeah, no, I fully get it, because I was sort of in the fringes and very involved. I know what the buzz is. I get the thing that just keeps you driving on, that you really love what you're doing. Constantly changing the business model, I suppose, to try and make it work. And again, I don't want to get down into a dark hole here, but is that a unique challenge every day, that you've got to think, what can we sell today in the way we like doing it and allow us to make a profit?
Yes. So I suppose we're always looking at ways. I mean, I have 27 full-time staff. So it's not just about making a profit. It's about, you know, sustaining 27 households. So and then my suppliers on top of that. We're blessed. We work with the most amazing Irish suppliers. Like, all our food is Irish. All our produce is as local as possible, as organic as possible. You know, so we work with small producers, family farms. And that kind of thing that's a badge of honor anyway. So that gives you credence going out to the public, so that you're saying, well, you know, the guy who rears the chickens delivers the chickens. The guys who grow the herbs deliver the herbs every second day. So that's a unique selling point that we have in Ireland that we're really, really blessed with.
Is it one that not all customers are prepared to pay for, in the sense, or be unhappy about paying for?
Well, I think, you know, food can be cheap, but cheap food is generally processed.
Yeah.
And you have to make a choice there for yourself. And the way I was looking at it is I would prefer to spend more money to support smaller businesses than buy processed food. But that's just my own take on things. I mean, you can look at it any way you want, but that's it. I mean, food is not cheap, you know, and good food is not cheap.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with you. JP, is one of the issues that, you know, everybody knows how much food costs. So, and I think you've said it yourself. You said to some lady in your restaurant who was giving out about the prices, how much were your sunglasses? And she said €200. And you said, well, how do you know they're good value for money? Tell me about that story.
Yeah, there was someone asked me. It was when I was doing a demo, actually. I can't remember where, and they asked me, did I think dining was good value in Ireland or very expensive? I can't remember the exact word. And I said I thought it was in relation to other countries, like in New York or other cities, New York or Copenhagen. But then I said to her, well, how much do you pay for your glasses? And she said, like €200. And I said, well, they probably cost like €5 to make. And she said, well, I mean, it's better value than food because, well, I have them after the. And I suppose it got me thinking about I think sometimes in Ireland, we don't value the experience of food in terms of the money that we pay for it. And we seem to be still kind of like, tied into this kind of material things have value, but not the, I suppose, not the immaterial.
Yeah, yeah. Richie, in terms of your own challenges with a new business, building up your staff team, tell us about the sort of staffing scenario, attracting, maintaining, first of all, getting good staff, secondly, keeping them. Just what's your thought process around that?
Well, it's an incredibly competitive job market out there for the hospitality industry. So it's a tough one to attract them. We lost a huge amount of good people to other industries over the COVID years.
Yeah.
And that leaves a gap in the experience of the population left that are still in the hospitality industry. So for those years, nobody was working in it. So it's about...
So it's a smaller pool of available talent.
Exactly. And then you don't even have people to train them because so many have gone off. But there's still some absolutely incredible people there. I was lucky enough that I'd worked in the industry for so long, I was just texting friends being like, hey, are you coming in? I'm doing something. Do you want to join on? But the turnover levels in there and in the back of house in particular are quite high. So trying to do that while training people, while having a very substantial wage cost it's difficult. But it's completely doable because you've got to treat your people well and let them be them, because if your staff are happy, the customers are going to see that when they come into the place, and it all just flows up.
Yeah, Gene, there's been a shift to the other foot in terms of, you know, looking after staff, and you know, the days or years of 100-hour weeks and stuff that I did in the early days, you couldn't even ask anybody to or contemplate asking anybody to do such things, which is good, I think, in a way that we now recognise, at least, you know, that there has to be a balance for people and that people won't stay with you if you push them too hard.
It's only the owners that do those hours, babe.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Well, listen, everything has changed over time. I mean, when I started in the industry, it was 85-hour weeks. That was our training.
Yeah.
You know, I did my hotel training in France and Austria and everything. And you know, you worked 6 days a week, or 6.5 days a week. But now, listen, the Working Time Act has that covered. And everybody, you know, it's actually not a difficult industry to work in. I think it's the most wonderful industry because it's so flexible.
Yeah.
You know, because you can do other things. All my staff are full-time, but I have staff that are in college. And they're able to do that while still working full-time because the flexibility of hours.
Yeah. And they can do shifts that suit them.
And also, too, I mean, I think a lot of people are under the impression that everybody in our trade is in minimum wage. I mean, that couldn't be further from the truth. I have one person out of 27 on minimum wage, and they're a junior trainee, but they also get tips. But so, it's not what it was, and it needs to be promoted within schools that it is a defining, it is a career. I mean, pre-COVID, the average age of my staff was 44.
Yeah.
These were career professionals, and they certainly weren't working at 44 years of age if they weren't making a good living.
No, you know? And that's, and you know, to have a mature staff like that in the industry is what you'd want, yeah, because you have their experience.
Exactly. Now, as Richie said, you know, we lost a lot of good people. And, you know, our average age has come down. I'm pulling it back up myself. but it's still a wonderful industry to work in.
Yeah.
And it is well paid. It's not what people think it is, and that perception needs to change.
Well, I also think, just to bear out your point, that there's a relativity factor at play that, you know, if minimum wage goes up as it has by 15%, everybody in the restaurant is going to expect that whatever they're on goes up by an equal amount.
Well, that's it. So when the minimum wage increase came in January, it was a 12.4 increase. Like I said, there was only one person in the business who was on minimum wage, but 24 people ended up getting a pay rise because it was all relative. You know, if you knock one up, you have to knock the next.
Yeah, yeah.
So a rising tide lifts all boats, and we all know that. So that's not a problem. But then you have to adjust your pricing to cover that, because staff costs are the biggest part of our costs in business.
JP, I'm going to give you the last word. It's a tough business, but it's a business that I sense that all three of you here actually love to your inner core. So let's end on a positive note and tell us about what you can expect in the next 12 months to 18 months in the industry.
Well, I hope we all continue to thrive. I don't know if I'll have another restaurant by then, but hopefully not. But I think that look, the bar has been raised so much over the last 15, 20 years in relation to food in Ireland, and I think there's so many great places for food, and I think that great places are going to continue, but also new great places are going to open as well in other areas, and I think that that's what we have to look forward to, you know.
All right. Well, look, it's been a great discussion. I thank all three of my guests, Gina Murphy from Hugo's, Richie Barrett from Kickies, and JP McMahon from Anir and Cava over there in Galway. Wishing you all continued success, and thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.